there's no restrictions as it sits right now on what does and what doesn't receive it.
Webway has finally brought you here. Behold, Forge the Narrative.
Hey everybody, welcome to another vacation episode of Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host. I'm joined by Tanya Gates.
Hey everybody.
Red Powell and Adam Camilleri.
What up?
Evening. How's it doing?
Doing amazing, actually. I got to do some stuff in Kansas City a couple of weeks ago. Absolutely awesome. Got to do some live streaming of the first ever stream games of 10th edition. New Warhammer 40,000.
I'm jealous.
It's fun. You know, when you're sitting there holding the cards in your hand, getting the experience of what it will be like for when we are actually playing this out in the wild and that kind of stuff, it's neat.
So you're like, essentially you've seen more 9th edition than anybody who hasn't like designed or playtested the game, right? So surely you're an expert by now, yeah?
Of new 40K, you mean? It's,
I'm joking. Yeah.
Well, I will say that I've had the opportunity to play some games and, of course, seen the play and got to look at some of the stuff. And, you know, Age of Sigmar players have been able to experience this for a long time, you know, with having the unit cards and that kind of stuff. And I think it makes a difference. And I'll tell you, if I can, just expound for a couple of minutes, is that what I'm seeing, and you can see some of the data cards that are up on the Warhammer community site. And what it looks like is that a lot of the things that you might have used command points for, like your stratagems and stuff, are now built into the units themselves. So whatever that cool thing that you thought that unit was supposed to do, you know, or you read about it in a story, or you're just looking at the model and that, like, it appears like it performs in this way, you have that on your sheet.
Yeah, it's a really interesting... So I think this is like almost the next generation of the 8th edition philosophy. So I remember when G-Dub transitioned from 7th to 8th, they said we really wanted a lot more bespoke. We wanted a lot more units to feel differentiated and bespoke. And that's when they started saying, well, not every infantry unit moves 6 inches anymore. Some move 7, some move 8, some move 5, some move 4, some move 6 still. And then they started really getting some more granularity into the game at that level and on the data sheet level. And now they've gone to a whole nother level of that again, where... essentially, like, every unit kind of has its own little janky shtick, its own thing that it does that makes it special. So you could find things that are quite similar. Let's say the Tyranids might be a good example with the new Gaunts. They got the Neurogaunts, the Barbgaunts, the Hormagaunts, et cetera, and the Gargoyles. And, you know, while they all have a bespoke stat line, now they also have a bespoke special rule to attach to that as well. So they're not just a flesh borer with wings or a flesh borer that walks or et cetera, et cetera. And I think that's a really cool way of doing it. Now, I do think it's going to be a lot more interesting early days as we all figure out what everything does. Because already, like, I've played a couple of games, and before I do anything in any phase, I point at units. I'm like, what's that going to do if I shoot it? What's that going to do if I charge it? What's that going to do if I look at it weird? And sometimes my opponent's going to be like, it's going to charge you. It's going to run away. It's going to shoot back at the stuff like that. And, It's kind of cool to figure it all out. It's a lot more. It's exciting.
Well, one of the kind of the interesting things where you have to kind of really look at it the way I think you're describing is, let's say, the Death Company Marines. The ones without jump packs behave slightly differently than the ones with jump packs. Yeah. So
yeah.
Those are things that you have to kind of consider when you are building your list. Like, what effects do you want to have at your disposal, or maybe apply to attach characters and that kind of stuff in your games? And it's a different puzzle to put together for this new edition.
It is.
I'm excited. I got to play Blood Angels recently. I know. Check it off on the card early this time. but Mephiston going with the unit, the Assault Intercessors, you know, running out of a Land Raider, I wasn't sure I was going to feel about that. In my mind, it seemed cool. It was cool.
Yeah, it worked out really, it was very, very cool for me.
Did you guys play?
Yeah.
What?
Sorry, did you and Red, you and Red played?
Oh, no.
I still can see how you could figure that from our comment, but yeah.
All right.
I know. We will, though. I get it. I'm sorry. But we will. You're right.
He now has a grudge against the Blood Angels. We have to
After they ran me over with their bikes last round we had.
that was we kind of took it both by surprise because we were playing a smaller point game and the table was even smaller than...
It was good. It went well. It taught me everything I needed to know about my guard before I played him.
But
don't
sorry.
Get charged.
But with this, you know, I took a regular Land Raider with Last Cannons. And right now, you can look at the stat lines. Like, Melta is not the be-all, end-all, like, vehicle killer anymore.
Well, it's
weird.
Yeah,
it's not going to close it down.
Yeah, you're not going to... So, in 8th edition... Sorry, in 7th edition, you could not... You could one-tap any... Just about any vehicle in the game could get... Apart from a super heavy, could get one-tapped by a Melta gun. If you rolled the right sequence of dice. In 8th edition, it was impossible for a single Melta gun shot to kill any vehicle that was over 6 wounds. Or over 8 wounds. It was just... You just couldn't do it, because you could only roll 8 damage. And then we started to get a bunch of guns into the game in 9th edition that could one-tap vehicles again. I'm talking about your rail guns, your volcano lances, these kind of things. And it's weird that we've had the kind of the goalpost shift on the Melta gun. It might be paying for its sins of 9th edition. So I don't know if you guys might see this as differently than I do, but
it's strength 9. You know, D6 damage with a Melta X. Like, and the Melta X means, like, if it's Melta 2, if you're within the Melta range, the half range, and does 2 extra damage.
It's not bad at all, but it's the fact that it's wounding on 4s or 5s against the vast majority of vehicles makes it a lot more interesting to take. Makes it actually just not be like, well, if I want to kill tanks, I just take the Control-C, Control-V Melta gun profile of my choice. And it really is interesting to see, I think, the flavor of editions. 8th edition was very much a plasma gun meta. The plasma gun was the kind of everything you always wanted. The plasma gun was the catch-all. It ruined everybody. It killed everything. And I feel like 9th edition was the Melta gun. The Melta gun profile was the catch-all. You wanted to kill a Tyranid warrior, Melta gun. You wanted to kill a Sentinel, Melta gun. You wanted to kill a Land Raider or a Knight, Melta gun. It was always good. I'm interested to see what the flavor is of 10th edition, whether it's changed again or it's just a completely new take all over. And my whole philosophy is out the window.
Putting this out there right now is that, you know, we don't know the points of a lot of this stuff. So we don't know about the efficiency or, you know, can you just take like 5 Melta guns and you're fine, you know, whatever. Like we're just talking about the baseline stats of things and as they appear on the page.
So if vehicles are going to be really difficult to shift, does that mean that I should finally build my Bane Blade, but I should make it a Shadow Sword?
I think you rule of cool that chassis and you build the one that speaks to you the most. But also, yes.
If you don't have a Shadow Sword at this point
in
time,
what are we even doing?
You probably need one.
I mean, I've had this Bane Blade for like over a year now, and I just like have never been able to decide which variant to build. I don't know.
The guns?
It's like Ghostbusters. If someone asks if you're a god, you say yes. If someone asks, should I build a Shadow Sword? You say yes. That's exactly how that works. There's no debate.
Okay. I mean, it also is one of the cooler looking ones, too. Right?
Yeah, because it's a real tank. That's a real gun on that tank.
Well, the expert has spoken. The man who knows tanks. So
right. Yeah.
Be building a cannon, Shadow.
Yeah, once you build that frame to house that main cannon, you don't actually have to glue the main cannon parts together. You can actually sub them all out. They basically kind of like just like pressure fit into all the various.
However, that cannon looks so good, it's worth committing to.
You know what? I still trust Red on this one.
Nope.
You know?
He's not wrong. I'm just, you know, just as wrong. A for instance.
I'm going to trust the guy who's actually sat in a tank before.
Yeah, it's worth it. And then next time, and you've got, I mean, trust me, I'm looking over here. I've got 7 of them on the table.
Good
and
man.
Every time I've committed to building a ship, like I'll be building whatever. I mean, I have them. I have Storm Lords. I have Bane Blades. I have, you know, the hammers. I've got the swords, whatever. The Shadow Sword still remains the primary one. And I actually have, admittedly, out of 7, 2 of them are Shadow Swords because I was like playing around. I was doing exactly what Paul was talking about. I was like, you know what? I could change this in and out, whatever. And I was like, But you know what? The Shadow Sword is just that good. I'm committing. And it just went all in.
So why do you have 7? Isn't 8 the magic number?
8 is Korn's magic number. 7 is more, I've been fortunate with other folks that haven't been as interested in the Baneblade chassis as I have, that as time has come around, I've just kind of acquired them over time, kind of, you know, like, you know, certain other militaries throughout the world over time just kind of collects other people's tanks. Like, I have a tendency to do that
too. All right, noted. Thanks for helping me decide, guys.
No problem. Anytime when it comes to tank.
So what I took in my when I played, I Dante, Mephiston, and Lamartis. So business as usual over here.
am I crazy, or are all the special characters looking really good so far? Like, there are good special characters in every faction that I've seen so far. They look exciting. They look like they bring some special spice. They do some stuff that you can't get anywhere else. They feel really good, I think.
Some folks are kind of like harshing on Dante a bit, and they have been since the new model came out. And I think they just kind of can't get over the fact that the axe is not damage 3. But he's got eight attacks.
Yeah, I was about to say, doesn't he have like bajillion attacks?
Yeah, and then leading a Sanguinary Guard unit, you know, I mean, you know, adding +1 to their charge, you know, making them take battle shock, making your opponents take battle shock test, and then the Sanguinary Guard with their abilities. Yeah, and then you add in rapid ingress. I mean, this, you know, I don't know. I feel like Dante, he's right on the verge of being a support character, but he's not a slouch either.
Mm. Well, he's old, man. At some point, he's going to have to be, you know, relegated back to the support cadres, right? On his walking flame out the back, hit him harder, boys. You know, kind of getting it on, old man Dante.
I feel like that's a you thing, man. I don't know what you're talking about.
Re-energized with his Primaris body.
I appreciate that you enjoyed that one there, Adam.
I did. Primaris can only do so much. The flesh is weak.
I mean, look, his Lord Regent of Imperium Nihilus. All this model is leading a unit, add 1 to the charge rolls made for the unit, and each time the model in the unit makes an attack, add 1 to the hit roll. Mm. I mean, I just don't see how that's bad, you know.
No, it's not. I'm interested they haven't, like, maybe this is a Codex thing, but, like, I've had so many wish listing things for this edition about pushing the story forward. I'd love to see, like, Lamartis end up in a Brutalis Redemptor Dreadnought, like, Death Company Brutalis Redemptor Dreadnought. Like, give me. Give it to me. What are you waiting for, Cheetah? Chop, chop. Let's go.
Is he'd finally get a cool model?
Exactly. Well, he needs a new model. But you could. What are you going to do? Going to make another chaplain with a jump pack? Like, no.
No, this let's the level Lamartis model is cool. Like the one that's now. The previous one was the one that looked a little off. Hmm. Do you remember that one? He's sitting like in a sideways pose.
I'm not sure I actually remember that one.
You should in your spare time. You should look up previous Lamartis models. But this current one looks awesome.
Yes, I see him. Yeah. Well, it looks like it's like he's in a jazz band. he's dancing, he's jiving.
But the Lamartis Fury Unbound, while this model is leading a unit, melee weapons equipped by models in that unit have the lethal hits ability.
So that's sixes to hit auto wound, yeah? In old language?
Yes.
While we're all getting our heads around what the USRs mean, the Universal Special Rules. Cool, that's really good. And does he let you have OC on Death Company as well? Is that something the chaplains do?
While a chaplain is near the Death Company, they do get their OC and can fall back and stuff where they can.
That's cool.
If they did not have a chaplain near them.
Very thematic.
Yeah. Sanguiner still does his trick, you know, Miraculous Savior. But I mean, to generalize it out, that rapid ingress stratagem.
So I don't know how much people have been paying attention out there, but I've played 2 games now, and even despite having, like, I was playing with the Gladius with some Marines, just like with some made up points. I felt like all my CP was getting kept for ingress, rapid ingress, and Overwatch. Mm-hmm. Overwatch just seems absolutely incredibly, incredibly strong.
Yeah. Do you want to break down like the basic stratagems that are available to everyone, like, and some of the ones to really watch out for?
Sure.
Yeah, sure. Who's got them up? Who's got them ready to go? Because I don't.
Well, lucky for you,
Hand pass, Red.
Not me, but Paul does.
Oh my goodness.
Okay, I got it.
Look at that. Yay, look how good that was. That was a perfect Heisman right there.
That really was.
Oh my gosh. And you guys are the professionals here? Come on now.
Save us. Save us now.
Other...
So we've got Command Reroll.
The
which
Old
is
Faithful.
Exactly the same. Counter-offensive, which is also exactly the same. And then Epic Challenge. So
this
when...
This is awesome.
Yeah. When. So it's one command point. When, in the fight phase, when a character unit from your army that is within engagement range of one or more attached units is selected to fight. The target, one character model in your unit, and the effect... Until the end of the phase, all melee attacks by that model have the precision ability.
Precision nice. Ability, making it to where you can assign to where those to a yeah. character for those attacks to go.
Okay.
It's precision is going to be really big, I think, in a lot of ways.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, continue, Tanya.
So next one?
Well, you want to talk, it's one CP for the Epic Challenge. We can unpack precision a little bit. Like, why do you think precision is going to be something that people may gravitate towards?
So, at all times, essentially, the last thing that's going to die in a unit will be any attached characters. You're going to remove the non-valuable.
Well, you can't even allocate wounds to the character.
Correct.
That's one of the rules: is you cannot allocate wounds to the character or attacks to the character until they're the last possible
and
option.
From what I can see. The durability of a fair few characters, notably the Space Marine ones, has gone down. Like, I only have 5 wounds now on Helbrecht and things like that. And just putting a bunch of, say, possibly devastating wound precision attacks on him, where you can take a couple of mortals here or there, even just doing that and then, like, getting one of your especially potent characters that's a quintessential force multiplier down to half wounds remaining really makes your opponent question whether or not they can commit them to a fight, to a combat. And I think giving pause to some of these things is going to be a really big deal, because we have so many characters in the game that are going to be simply there for a support means. I think there's things like lieutenants that let you fall back and charge, fall back and shoot, give you lethal hits. Innately, just 4 wounds at toughness 4 with no invulnerable save. That guy is just as easy to kill as like 2 intercessors. And if you can kill 2 intercessors, like just kill the guy, and then you know they go down by bravery, by battle shock, they a lot more easy to manage in many 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 ways. So I think it's a really good idea, especially when there's other things like say a Space Marine captain lets you have free CP, so all free stratagem uses on the unit that they've joined. Just killing out these characters is really gonna undo the knot of your opponent's army, what they've built to do, what they've built to be able to use, and the combinations, the combo pieces that they have. Pick them out. I think precision is extremely important.
There we go. And then you touched on something that will come up as we're eventually talking about, like, data sheets. You know, there are some characters or units or whatever that can access a stratagem at either a reduced cost or a second time or something like that, and can be really powerful.
Well, so here's a great one to consider. We've already seen what kind of what My Will Be Done offers to Necron Warriors. Let's say it just gives them +1 to hit. You got 20 Necron Warriors with +1 to hit. You can either kill 20 Necron Warriors to kill the Lord, that's giving them +1 to hit, or you can completely negate the +1 to hit and take all their efficiencies down by, what is it? It'd be 3s to hit, or is it 4s to hit to 3s to hit? I can't remember. It could be up to 30% efficiency just by killing out the Lord in the unit rather than trying to kill the unit. And yeah. So it could be a really great way of getting around the best parts of someone's book.
Oh, good point. And, trying to mentally kind of start rationalizing what are valuable things I need to be looking for as I'm looking at what are kind of like brand new data sheets and what will be a brand new world, brand new meta.
Yeah, absolutely. Brand new world for sure. Anyway.
What's next, Tanya?
All right. The next one, which I'm really excited about, is Insane Bravery. And it is 1 command point. When in the battle shock step of your command phase, just after you have failed a battle shock test taken for a unit from your army, the target, the unit from the army that battle shock test was just taken for, even though your battle shocked units cannot normally be affected by your stratagems, and the effect, your unit is treated as having passed that test instead and is not battle shocked as a result.
So a couple things. 1 command point instead of the 2 that we've had in the past, and it's not a one-time use. either.
And you can wait until you fail it. Mm. So you can wait until you know that you need to pass it, essentially.
Yeah, the sequencing's a lot more friendly, user-friendly.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mean to misstate either. Still one-time use, you know, in that round, but not one per use per game.
Correct. Are any of the stratagems?
Not that I've seen so far. Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. All right. So the next one is grenade. It's also one command point. When in your shooting phase, target one grenades unit from your army that is not within engagement range of any enemy units and has not been selected to shoot this phase. And the effect is select one enemy unit that is not within engagement range of any units from your army and is within 8 inches of and visible to your grenades unit. Roll 6d6 for each 4+ that enemy unit suffers one mortal wound.
I love this stratagem. I love it. I think it's great. It's a phenomenal way for units that wouldn't be able to do any meaningful damage to a unit to just slap it down and get a little bit done. Like, let's say you just got, I mean, I don't know 100% sure that a guard squad is going to have grenades, but theoretically, if a unit of Cadians has grenades, they've got a plasma gun and a melter gun. Well, one CP, because it doesn't say you can't shoot as well here. It just says you just happens in your shooting phase. So you pop down your plasma gun, your melter gun, throw some grenades, shoot some las guns. Maybe you do a sum total, something meaningful before you die on that objective.
Seems good.
The guardsman life.
The life of the guardsman.
Maybe you do something meaningful.
Maybe.
All right, next one. This one sounds really fun. Tank shock, one command point. In your charge phase, the target is one vehicle unit from your army. Until the end of the phase, after your unit ends a charge move, select one enemy unit within engagement range of it, then select one melee weapon your unit is equipped with. Roll a number of d6 equal to that weapon's strength characteristic. If that strength characteristic is greater than that enemy unit's toughness, roll two additional d6 for each 5+ that enemy unit suffers one mortal wound to a maximum of 6 mortal wounds.
I like this.
Yay! Being hit by a tank matters.
Instead of just trying to roll 5 to hit, you know, with the doors on the rhino or whatever.
I mean, I'm no physicist or scientist, but something tells me if I got hit by a tank, it would suck.
Yeah. Ray, can you confirm that?
Yeah.
I mean, the speed definitely matters, right? Like, it's just a matter of physics. But yeah, I can confirm getting hit by something upwards of 70+ tons, it can do some damage.
I feel like that's like the understatement of the year. Yeah, you know, it could do some damage.
Could do some damage. Yeah.
I haven't seen outside of some unfortunate mechanical issues what can stop it yet.
Fair. Fair.
The next one is the spicy one that we were kind of alluding to earlier. And this is brand new. This is not something that's really existed outside of like special units and special rules.
One command point, rapid ingress. When at the end of your opponent's movement phase, one unit from your army that is reserves is the target. And the effect, your unit can arrive on the battlefield as if it were the reinforcement step of your movement phase. And there is a restriction on this one, so you cannot use this stratagem to enable a unit to arrive on the battlefield during a battle round it would not normally be able to do so in.
Man.
It's powerful. It's so powerful. Surprise, like, it's... So your opponent does their movement phase, and they've left themselves, you know, a little pocket where they can't see it with any of their guns. And you're like, well, one CP, it's only one CP, and Terminators with a homing beacon do this for free. They get to do this for zero CP. Just arrive on the battlefield, your opponent cannot answer them, and then you can, in your movement phase, you move advance, you know, move advance charge, whatever you want to do. It is extremely powerful, and I don't want to say this is a gotcha, because it's plain to see how powerful this is, and, you know, every podcast and every it's going to be used in just about every game is how I can see it. It's like, mm-hmm. I want to be able to use this and wield this as a weapon in every list that I play, that I'm considering playing. So everyone's going to be very good at knowing. About 6 months from now, everyone's going to have been bad touched by this a handful of times and have figured out how to stop that, I think.
I'm really hoping for this one that my Age of Sigmar experience is going to help me to both use this effectively, but also not have this used effectively against me, because I actually built something like this into my ogre list with one special character and a relic, and so many times it got me so many points. So I'm really looking forward to giving this one a shot.
You really just need to be like on top of your nooks and crannies in your movement phase, not leave any really juicy ones for your opponent. Just drop premium units into. Do jump pack units in the Blood Angels have Deep Strike, Paul?
Yes.
Sanguinary Guard, and that's my worst nightmare. Right, I leave a hole where I don't have any good guns, and then like 10 freaking Sanguard and a good character rock up, and then, well, they just move 12 in their turn. They Deep Strike 9 inches away, I can't answer them, and then they can just instant charge the best parts of my army next turn. That's like game ending right there.
It feels really good to do that, by the way.
I can imagine. And I'm starting to picture the mental load and arithmetic I'm going to have to go through, like, of trigonometry, being like, well, you can go there, I've got to stop that, I've got to stop this one over there, I've got to let it over there. If it goes there, that one's okay, I can overwatch it, I can do this, blah, blah. Yeah.
So, and I'm not trying to indicate that the Sanguinary Guard, like, a be-all, end-all unit, but they are a grenade unit, too, you know, so, and they can all have multi-pistols.
Sounds good.
You come down and, like, grenade a, grenade a Titan, you know, multi-pistol it, and then charge in. After you've rapid ingressed.
That sounds horrific.
It's very satisfying. I'm sorry. Getting off topic. We're talking about rapid ingressing. And the next one, too, the Fire Overwatch. This is much different now.
So it is also one command point. It triggers in your opponent's movement or charge phase just after an enemy unit is set up or when an enemy unit starts or ends a normal advance, fallback, or charge move. It targets one unit from your army that is within 24 inches of that enemy unit, and that would be eligible to shoot if it were your shooting phase. And the effect, your unit can shoot the enemy unit as if it were your shooting phase, but there are restrictions on this one as well. So until the end of the phase, each time a model in your unit makes a ranged attack, an unmodified hit roll of 6 is required to score a hit, irrespective of the attacking weapon's ballistic skill or any modifiers. And you can only use the stratagem once per turn.
I'm going to say this is my first gripe. I think this is a little too good. The 24 inches is what makes it too good, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
On a smaller board, and on a mission that has three mid-board objectives in a, you know, conventional corners or Dawn of War deployment, everything important in that game is happening within 24 inches. So it's kind of the whole table of relevance. If I was to suggest one thing, I'd like to see this be 18 or 12 inches, because it's always your best unit. You get your best shooting unit within 24 of every good objective, and your opponent just can't take them. Like, if it's a very appropriately tooled unit, it's a really imposing thing to have on the table against somebody. I think it's extremely, extremely powerful, and you want to be able to slap this thing down. Once again, everybody should be like thinking about units right now that will be good to use this on, and making sure they've got those models ready to go when their index hits.
Good point. And it is, you know, you still do have to roll to hit, and you're looking for sixes on
some things. Unless you auto hit, baby, or your Eldar or sisters, and you just get to have miracle dice and guarantee shots and things like that.
Yep. It is definitely going to be powerful. And how you generate command points is that at the beginning of each player's turn, each player generates a command point.
Yeah. I would like to say, just theoretically, I have not seen an index yet, but this is something that makes me excited to bring out a Hellhound. Like, yes, yes, give me the Hellhound tech.
I'm always excited to bring out the Hellhounds. I even built my Chimeras as, like, Hellhound light.
Yeah. I mean, I've got three Hellhounds, and they didn't see the table in 9th edition, and I feel bad about it. I've also got a Hellhammer that has every sponson and all heavy flamers. So it's got 8 twin-linked heavy flamers. Yes, please, Overwatch.
Wow.
Give me.
Yeah, there's no restrictions on what type of unit you can play this on.
I mean, you want to talk about a Knight Valiant just walking into the middle of the table and being like, you want to walk within 18 of me? No, you don't. You are instant dead. In your turn, you are instant dead walking within 18. You try and move those boots, toast.
Oh, on that note, let's take a quick break. then we'll come back. We'll go over the rest of the stratagem and, you know, talk a little bit more about the what's the exciting things to come in Warhammer.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
Hey, everybody, we are back. I got everybody here. Thanks for checking out our sponsors. It means a whole lot. I also want to give a shout out, what's up, to our new patrons for this episode. We've got Aquila, Gareth, Thomas, and John. Welcome. Thank you so much for supporting us on Patreon. That is how we get these episodes out and edited. Everyone there, it means just an incredible amount of people that support the show in that way. There are other ways, of course, to support the show. That is just one of them. And the people that are choosing to do it that way, it means so much. Seriously, thank you.
I'm also enjoying like how sassy some of our patrons are and how they have no reluctancy to razz Paul at all. I love it.
You talking about the Discord?
Yes.
Yep, we do have a Discord, and it's one of the things, like, any patron level gets you in that chat and starting to get some discussion going, and, you know, as the folks start to join in there. And that's actually leading to the hobby segment. I posted some stuff I've been working on, and we're going to talk about it on the show, but you can actually see some pictures in there and on, like, Twitter and stuff like that. But yeah, that's coming up a little bit later. And then the folks that are continuing to you know, get some t-shirts and the Patreon, or just leave some likes, leave some 5-star reviews. You know, again, there's a bunch of different ways to support the show, and any way you do it, we really appreciate it. But the Patreon is a big place to go. And any level helps us, you know, do the behind the scenes stuff that actually produces the show and makes it easier on everyone. So that is, you know, a direct way of contributing to that. And here we are. We get to have these shows.
Yay.
We're talking more about season two as we, you know, come off of our vacation, which is going to be soon, but you're going to see some more frequent episodes from us. That's not an overpromise. We love talking about Warhammer, and there's a lot of stuff to talk about. So more shows are coming. We'll talk about the format and everything going forward. But we were talking about stratagems, the brand new stratagems, the things that are available to everyone. These are, if you got command points, this is in the main rulebook, you can use this stuff. Where were we?
Okay, we're at go to ground. So this is one command point, and you can use this in your opponent's shooting phase just after an enemy unit has selected its targets. And one infantry unit from your army that was selected as the target of one or more of the attacking unit's attacks, and they can, until the end of the phase, have a 6+ invulnerable save and have the benefit of cover. And the benefit of cover is a little bit different now, right?
The benefit of cover adds 1 to the armor saving throw as against ranged attacks. Does not apply to models with a saving throw of 3+ or better against attacks with an AP of 0. So that's the big difference there. But if you're not a Marine or a 3+ armor save, you're going to get that +1 to your armor saving throw.
All right. And those don't stack, right? So you can't, like, be in terrain and then use this one.
Right.
Am I correct in that?
Yes.
I do think this is a big deal for, I think, the invuln more than anything else. I think if people want to remove cover or get around cover, they'll put things in their list to ignore cover. But so far, I haven't seen anything that ignores an invuln save. So this is, or easily ignores an invuln save. So this is pretty good, I think.
I was going to say, I thought we saw some things. The Vindicare Assassin.
Yeah, that's right.
The one, I listed one exceptional thing. I'm sorry.
I mean, that's fine. I mean,
it's something.
You could assume, like, you know, there'll be what was the one for Chaos that took off your invuln saves? And then there was the one for Space Marines as well. Null Zone might be a null zone.
Null Zone for effect. Space Marines, Hex, Death Hex or something like that.
Death Hex for Marines. You could expect that, but no one's going to walk up to 10 guardsmen on an objective and be like, man, I need to Death Hex this guy, otherwise I ain't going to get this objective back.
Didn't we see on the Games Workshop's live stream, they're like 20 person guard squad. So think of the value for one command point.
Absolutely, absolute value. I mean, there are a lot more 20 mans coming back into the game, hopefully. Well, having a new lease on life with a new edition change. I mean, I mentioned Necron Warriors before as well. They could definitely be a candidate for this.
And that's 6 plus invulnerable save. For one CP when you need it, if you're hanging out on an objective. I mean, what we've seen is there's a couple of different ways to play the objectives. And you can either flip cards and do it that way. And if you flip the cards, then typically the reward, the points that you can score, is the reward for doing it are a little bit higher. You can do fixed objectives where you kind of know what you're doing every turn. But I think some players will be going for the flipping cards, and so they may become really important to dig a unit off an objective, and you can gonna make it a little bit harder for you. You might completely flip a game.
So something like this, what I'm hearing you guys say, I may be completely incorrect because I'm fairly new to the game still, but what I'm hearing is that you're probably not going to want to use this if you've only got a handful of models, right? So if you've got like 5 models on an objective, it's probably not going to make sense to use this.
I guess it could, but I'm thinking about just like your investment of your what might be your last command point. You know, what it might shut you off from something else.
Gotcha.
That's still an option. Remember that it's there. That's the. What's the next one?
So the next one is Smokescreen. It's also 1 command point. You can use this in your opponent's shooting phase just after an enemy unit has selected its targets. The target is 1 smoke unit from your army that was selected as the target of 1 or more of the attacking unit's attacks. And the effect is until the end of the phase, all models in your unit have the benefit of cover and the stealth ability.
Stealth is -1 to hit.
Seems pretty good.
Seems very good. Being able to get cover back on vehicles, monsters, even bikes, cavalry, things like this is actually going to be a bit of a thing to people to get their heads around. Like, knights can just get cover now. It's pretty wild.
Well, if they have smoke, you don't, from this stratagem anyway, 1 smoke unit from your army.
Yeah. Off from that stratagem, yeah, exactly right. But with how ruins and a lot of terrain pieces work, just being obscured or not being 100% visible to the shooting or attacking model, you can just get cover. There's no restrictions as it sits right now on what does and what doesn't receive it. So that's going to be another thing for people to keep their eyes on. But sorry, tangent.
So I'm hoping that my new Shadow Sword has the smoke keyword.
Well, with how big it is, even if it's in the current rules, no one's going to be able to see the whole brick.
Right.
It's a hefty lad. You hide a sponson.
Sheesh, judgy.
Get cover.
Get the benefit of cover. And then the stealth, I'm pretty sure that's what the stealth does, -1.
Stealth is -1, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that can be pretty significant, especially, you know, when you're looking at elevated toughness, you know, things like a Melta needing a 5 to wound at a -1 to hit, you're basically going to go, you might as well call that no damage.
Well, and if you've got +1 save, you'll get a 6 up armor if you don't have an invuln.
Yeah, good point.
So if you had a 3 up armor save and cover, instead of getting no save versus the -4 melter, you'd get a 6 up. So yeah.
I mean, here we go. It's looking like no damage. Pack last cannons. That's the moral of the story. last cannons and D weapons. So okay, the next one is very exciting. Heroic intervention.
Oh, as a Blood Angel player, I don't know why this one would be exciting to you.
This is the most expensive, or not the most, counteroffensive is also 2 command points, but this is a 2 command point, so you've got a plan for this.
Okay, so you can use this in your opponent's charge phase just after an enemy unit ends a charge. And the target is 1 unit from your army that is within 6 inches of that enemy unit and would be eligible to declare a charge against that unit if it were your charge phase. And the effect, your unit now declares a charge that targets only that enemy unit and you resolve that charge as if it were your charge phase. And the restriction is that you can only select a vehicle unit from your army if it is a walker. Note that even if this charge is successful, your unit does not receive any charge bonus this turn.
So this is the only way to heroically intervene. So in the previous edition, because now characters have joined units and, you know, some certain units could heroic intervene in 9th edition, but very few could. But every character could heroic intervene 3 inches, some 6 inches, etc. Now this is it. And you can only do it if the unit you're going to heroic intervene into has also charged. So gone are the days of slapping a 50, 60 mil base character onto an objective and being able to heroic anything that could come within range of that objective.
Or a bullet,
if they Yeah, a perfect example. Another one, a blow train, or any combination of knights. If I just run termagants onto your objective to take it away, you can't heroic in to stop me anymore, unless those termagants have declared a charge. So it's very clear to see how you can have that interplay back on objectives again, rather than what it was for a lot of people. I mean, Space Wolves were doing this up until literally like this weekend. Space Wolf players are still going to be doing this, slapping down a Wolf Lord on a bike and being like, well, you can't come anywhere near his objectives because I got a 6-inch heroic intervention. This guy gives you fights last, and so he's going to fight first, and he's going to mollywop you. So this is a very different take on heroic intervention, and I still think it's good, but it's definitely going to change how we interact with specifically objectives in my example, which I think is the most relevant one to the winning and losing of games.
You got to roll to charge too; you just don't scoot in.
Exactly right. Exactly. You have to roll a 6 technically, and you can still roll under. Like, and you've spent 2 CP to still possibly fail, and I think that kind of sucks.
It can. Oh, not that we're trying to put that out there in the world that someone's going to have that happen to them, but you know.
So as a newer player, I do feel, and as somebody who quite often interacts with other even more new players, I do think that heroic intervention in 9th edition was very much a gotcha moment for people. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was a gotcha moment once for them, and then they never forgot it, right?
Yeah.
But some of the peculiarities of how heroic intervention worked were not immediately clear to new players. So I think having heroic intervention this way, clearly seen as a stratagem and clearly laid out on what you can and cannot do with heroic intervention, I think it is going to stop a lot of the gotchas that happened with at least newer players before.
I agree with you, Tanya. I do want to add to that, though. I want to add to the notion that, there used to be, I think back to, I have a 3rd edition Eldar codex, and in that codex it actually, and on the box for like a box of Eldar, they used to have like difficulty levels associated with different armies, right? And I know that there's something to accessibility and having an army that is available and easily playable by everybody or anybody who's interested in the aesthetic of the army, but I will say that there does, and I think there remains, certain levels of finesse. And I think to the point that heroic intervention was, and I largely think the assault phase or the fight phase, the charge phase, that latter half, had some differing levels of finesse to it that put it outside of the all-comer approach, if that makes sense, mm-hmm. because of how much went into it and all the extra little movement and all the implications of every movement. And I think that while I'm not diminishing by any means, I'm saying I'm using the yes and approach in this, Tanya, because I do agree. Yes, it did feel like a gotcha moment for many, and it was also a very much a finesse thing. And I doubt that aspect of it is going away. I think there's sometimes, especially when it comes to tactics and some elements of many games, it is something that you have to experience. And I think that in some cases, that actually means that it's a functioning mechanic, even though it wasn't something that was initially received. I know that might be not as welcoming to swallow down or to take, but I do think that that's part of the mechanic, if that makes sense.
Sure. I just think like the confusion for a lot of people sort of lied in the name heroic intervention.
Sure.
Which, you would think that something would trigger that besides like moving on to an objective, right? Like,
sure. It had a place too, that the character was going to rush in and save their buddies or whatever.
But right. No, right. And I think that with a lot of new players, they just didn't think that, not intervening into like any sort of action. It just wasn't clear, or maybe it wasn't just something that like came to their mind that, oh, this is something that I should be aware of.
Sure.
Just because of the name.
Yeah. Yeah. I could see
of that. The ability. So.
This is like, I think it's more permissive and also restrictive at the same time. So I think it's kind of accomplished maybe what the original intent was. And I think this is more than just a change to to help that feel it or experience, I think this is more in line with what it probably what they thought of when the rule got put in place in the first place.
Right. So, like, if you were a new player and you weren't charging anything that phase, right, you wouldn't immediately think that heroic intervention would be able to be triggered, right? Because the ability before said in the charge phase, which if you didn't take your charge as a new player, you wouldn't necessarily assume that the charge phase was happening. That's just why I feel like it was a bit of a gotcha. Not because it wasn't cool or, you know, it wasn't, you know, fun. It was just like, just those two little things about it that I think just didn't sit right with new players. But like I said, it only got them once and then they never forgot it.
This is going to be fun to see what people do with all these new tools in their toolbox and how the command point burn like factors in when we start layering on. You know, you got a few stratagems in the indexes as well. Like, for instance, there's a really cool one in the Blood Angels that allows them to consolidate 6 inches. That is now a very uncommon thing in the game. You have to end your consolidation in combat with another unit, so it's not just move 6 inches for nothing. So there's some restrictions. So they're kind of really limiting some of those, super particular type moves, which is cool. A little bit more kind of the playability back and forth element to the game. I do not mind that.
Yeah, it's kind of clear G-Dub wants a little bit. They don't want it to be like a fully... They still want to retain the you go, I go feel of the game that's been forever, you know, for the whole time of, you know, or pretty much all their games. But they do want a little bit more interaction between players when it's they're not the active player turn.
That's where our kind of rundown of the stratagems for 10th, the new edition of Warhammer 40,000 right now. I want to talk about the hobby stuff. We'll mention that after the break. But one of my projects for this edition is to rebase all my Astra Militarum. I play Catechins. I started that army a long time ago, and basing essentially became a mixture of just like gravel and paint over gravel, you know, little ballast rocks glued on. And then, like, as I began to chase the meta, like, the basing got even less exciting. So it really wasn't meeting my current modern day hobby standards, and I want to stick with the Catechin style of things, even though, you know, the Astra Militarum, at least the previous codex, seem to kind of shift it into that mixed regiment feel. I'm cool with that. I'm definitely going to have, you know, we've talked about it before, how we're going to kitbash into whatever regiment that we are most kind of attracted to aesthetically, but still make it very clear to our opponents what things are, so on and so forth. But the basing, anyway, I've wanted to make them more jungly. And I know that there are like 3D print stuff out there and third-party base stuff and all kind of basing materials that you can kind of make. But I didn't find anything that I thought gave me that real organic vegetation. And what stuck out at me is I saw someone making a diorama for one of the dioramas, like a World War II something or whatever, and they were doing something jungly, and it was like one of those like sped up videos that didn't show you what the materials were. I'm like, dang, that is what jungle mud looks like. Like, I could do better, you know.
You have to reverse engineer it.
Yeah, some ballast. And so I did a little bit of poking around online, and someone suggested using, you know, like herbs that you'd find from a spice rack at the grocery store.
That's genius.
So turns out this week, this particular brand of spice was on sale too. So it was nice.
People ask what your bases are. It's like, it's Italian herbs.
Yeah.
Italian herbs.
Well, like herbs de provenance or the Italian mix or whatever. Yes.
There's a little Cajun over there. There's a little...
Well, Mrs. Dash, I don't even know if that exists anymore.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
With this, though, I went and got... the thing that jumped out to me the most, because I was looking for things that had the both texture and size of particle in there, and I got an ounce of dried thyme. And
delicious.
Okay. Yeah, very, very fragrant. You know, for instance, and I'll say on the bottle, like, for ultimate freshness, keep the jar closed and away from heat, light, and moisture. So I kept the jar open because I don't want the scent of thyme. But I think after you paint it, it kind of starts to go away and that kind of stuff. But so this, it looks, I mean, like pieces of vegetation, because it is.
It is. Genius.
You know, and it's dried. And so what I did was, I think what I really want is kind of like a modeling paste, but I didn't have any of that. I do have a big old tub of, I have 32 fluid ounces of Mod Podge. And so what I did, I got a solo cup and I poured some, not an exact measurement, I poured some into the solo cup. I then put in a couple of shakes of thyme, and I needed more thyme than I thought it was going to take. So I took, a tenth of this jar and put it in maybe an inch worth of Mod Podge at the bottom of the solo cup. And then I squirted in some Liquitex brown acrylic paint. I mean, just like one, like a toothpaste squirt. This is like terrible measurements, but I was simply testing at this point.
No, toothpaste squirt. We get it.
Because I wanted the mixture. I knew the Mod Podge would dry clear, and it would also kind of start, it would all kind of pull up too as well, like shrink a little bit as it was drying. And so I wanted the color in there from this acrylic, but I'm sure you could use whatever paint you have out in hand. But I wanted the color to be there in case, like, over time and over wear, you know, things started to chip or something, if anything chipped or cracked, there would be some color mixed in with the base layer of material to do that. And so then I mixed it up really well with a plastic stick and started putting it on bases. Like, my Astra Militarum heavy weapons teams are still on 60 mils. I was like, well, what was the best place to start? Let's go to 50 mils on these. And then those somewhat abstract measurements I just gave you covered nine 50 millimeter bases.
Not so bad.
Yeah, not bad. You know, especially, you know, with the materials here. I mean, they're, you know, next to nothing in on the materials. But then after I got the stuff spread and let it dry, actually, I'll tell you the full thing. I tried doing this next step first, but it didn't work. And I only tried it on one base. And now for all future bases, I'm doing it the way I'm describing now. But using puff paint, Tulip Puffy is what I'm using, to create vines or a vine-like texture on the bases after the thyme and glue, or sorry, Mod Podge and paint mixture had dried on the base.
So,
and
you did do it first before you put all the Mod Podge on?
I tried putting the vines on first, and then I went in with the Mod Podge after the vines had dried. But after, when the Mod Podge dried, I did not like the way it looked. And so, and they all, the vines also kind of, like, the puff paint also, like, it spread out a little bit. It didn't keep that. And maybe it's just the type that I'm using. This might not be the best. It certainly was not the most expensive puff paint, but it kind of spread out a little bit. So, I mean, you've seen the pictures, Tanya. I think you even commented, like, it looks kind of like roots.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. To me, it looks more like roots. And I think it is because they kind of spread out. So, like, when you look at roots, they're not typically very thin. But yeah, they look like roots to me.
And I don't mind that either. Like, it's fine enough. There's roots in the jungle. it got the effect that I was looking for as being some other element on the base. And this puff paint, you know, they come with applicators. It was basically no time at all to apply. Like, the most time involved in any of this is the drying time.
No, the most time is the time.
You got me there. That is... there's it. A lot of time on these bases, but that was the, it's like, that's the spice that to me looked the most like the jungle aesthetic that I was going for. But I'm sure you could, I looked at rosemary, and then, you know, there's like a pre-mixture of stuff that you can get, you know, I'm sure it's called different things different places. But the sheen, so I didn't like the sheen, and I got matte Mod Podge, but somehow it was still shiny. Maybe that was, I don't know what made it shiny. But I didn't love, but I knew once I started layering on the GW paints, like I dry brushed it, Steel Legion drab, and then went up to You Stabbedy Bone.
Nice.
So, you know, you get that light color. And then I went with Death Pearl Forest with Athonian Camo Shade, for the vine / roots. And I've got a base that I like. I think this looks kind of jungly.
It totally looks jungly.
And I was able to kind of, like, for pretty low cost, I can repeat it. I'm not relying on somebody to 3D print. I'm not buying scenic bases or whatever. And I can build my models and then work the basing material around them however I want. And what really got me is if when I want to go to make a scenic like display base, like for armies on parade or for tournament points or whatever, you know, I've got all the materials extremely readily available to do whatever.
So something exciting has happened. Yeah, armies on parade just reminded me. The next town over from me got a Warhammer store. And where I live, that is extremely rare. Like, normally we have, like, friendly local game stores, and that's it. And so now I have the opportunity to actually take part in armies in parade. So maybe I will.
There's, some, like, a couple of, like, little rules. I think it has to be a certain, like, point and then, like, a certain size for the display. But you definitely should, like...
Yeah, it looks like they have different themes or whatever, like every quarter or so. So maybe it's every 2 months. I'm not sure. But yeah, that's maybe something that I will look into doing in the fall or the winter. I think that could be kind of fun.
Get in on that. If anybody out there has some, I guess, ideas on what, you know, types of herbs you can find in the spice aisle at a grocery store for jungle or any other kind of textures.
Oh, baby. Parsley flakes. Come on.
Okay. Oh, maybe so. Need some vegetation.
Yeah. Well, then they'll be bright green. You just toss like a few of those on top.
Maybe so. I feel like everything has to be painted because, you know, non-painted stuff next to a painted miniature always stands out as bizarre to me.
Nah. So for my custodies, which all have pretty intense scenic bases on them, I put like just literal rocks on them and don't paint them. Like, okay. they're just natural rocks. So they're just like a texture paint. And then I do actually paint that just because sometimes my game store wouldn't have the same color. So I'd have to paint it. And then I will wash it and then dry brush it. And then I'll put a couple tufts. I'll put some just natural rocks on there. And then I have this like fall foliage mix. And I throw some of that on. And it's like a... I want to say it's like a deciduous forest in fall. It looks kind of nice, but yeah, I don't paint those rocks. I just stick them on with some super glue and good to go.
I cannot argue with the results.
No, they look pretty good.
All right, well, that's our show this week. New edition strats in the main book. 1-inch of Mod Podge in the solo cup. Toothpaste squirt of Liquitex. About a tenth of this time jar and puff paint. You're off to the jungle.
Oh, man, if I had the time, I would make, like, a blog post that's, like, a recipe, you know, like, those like, recipe blogs.
Your whole life
blogs.
Story. And then,
yes, and then, like, the most vague recipe ever on the bottom. Yeah.
So you can see pictures on Twitter and in the Discord. They actually hit the Discord first for the FDN Discord for Patreon subscribers, although we're just more just chatting and stuff in there, but also on Twitter. Warmaster_TPM, and I put it on Instagram at Fights with Dice. This is like vacation episode 4.
We've done 4 episodes already of vacation blog?
That's it.
Yup.
We'll be back to normal very soon and what that normal is, and we'll let everybody know. But again, you know, everybody that's been listening, thank you, and I hope this appearing on your feed has made the day a little bit better. We'll see you all
Spock's joy.
Yeah.
FTN Spock joy.
See everybody.
Night.
Bye, everybody.
See ya.
Our craft worlds are sentient beings. These hosts are not. Better luck next time, monkeys!